weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to the gang on Drive for steering us through the afternoon. It's Thursday the 7th of November and you're listening to Game On. Well, it's been a busy day on the football front. Hamer Hallgrimsson has named his squad for the Finland and England games. The Ireland women found out their opponents for the 2025 Nations Leagues. And Rovers are in European action. That game is underway. We'll be going to Tony O'Donoghue in Tala very shortly. Keith Tracy is in studio as well. He's going to share all his football news and views. Well, it's also the eve of Ireland's big test against New Zealand under lights at the Viva Stadium. Bernard Jackman is on hand to tell us where the game will be won and lost. And Jeff Shepherd has all your US sports news. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, welcome along. We are going to get straight to the live action. Shamrock Rovers are playing TNS in Tala Stadium. Tony O'Donoghue is there. Tony, it's not going to script so far.
No, Rovers in a bit of bother here. 18 minutes on the clock. It's Shamrock Rovers 0. Total Network Solutions, TNS from Wales 1. Rovers started like a train with plenty of possession. After only 30 seconds, Johnny Kenny turning the edge of the box and had a shot at goal. Aaron McAniff has been prominent. He's blazed over a couple of times and there's been good midfield play between Ferrugia, Burns and McAniff. But, you know, TNS have proven that they're good on the counter. Stephen Bradley was actually warning them yesterday. So they had a chance early on. And after 14 minutes, ball crossed from the left-hand side, came to Declan McManus. Leon Poles pulled off a magnificent save to keep it at bay. But then from the resulting throw-in, the ball came back into the box. And Jordan Williams, who'd supplied the initial cross from the left, was almost unmarked within the box and he rifled the ball past Poles to give the Welsh visitors the early goal and the boost that they so badly need. Now Rovers of course had a great start to this campaign with a draw against Apoel and then a comprehensive win up in Belfast against Larne, and this was the game that they were targeting as, you know, another winnable one, and if they were to get to 7 points in the group that was likely to extend their stay in this competition till after Christmas, but they'll have to get back on terms soon because at the moment with 20 minutes in, it's Shamrock Rovers 0, TNS from Wales 1.
And Tony, the expectation was of course there'd be a bit of a step up from Larne. I know it's only 18, 19 minutes in, but as it stands, is it even enough just in terms of personnel?
Rovers looked like very good at the beginning. You know, the team that they picked, you know, not deciding not to go with the likes of Graham Burke, who was so influential the last day. He's on the bench, as is Jack Byrne, as is Gary O'Neill. But, you know, they started really well. But TNS, what we were warned, were good on the counter-attack, and that's the way it's proven so far. So Rovers still with all the possession, but TNS with the goal to the good.
It sounds like there's a good atmosphere there as well.
Yeah, although I'm still expecting more people to come. The traffic around the M50 at this time of the day, yes. Shamrock Rovers were concerned that it would have an effect. They're expecting over 6,000 people here. It doesn't look like there's quite that many here yet, but as the game goes on, yeah, the atmosphere is good, but it'll be even better if Rovers can get an equaliser.
Yeah, Keith, you've been watching it as well. What have you thought so far?
Yeah, pretty similar to what Tony is saying. Shamrock Rovers are having the lion's share of the ball, but TNS do look dangerous when they win the ball on the edge of their own 18-yard box. They're springing up the pitch in the blink of an eye. Leon Poles has already made one good save and Williams has managed to hit the back of the net. So I think transition is a big word in modern-day football, and I think transition, when Shamrock Rovers lose the ball, it'll be how quickly they can get back into their defensive shape and stop TNS springing out. But with the likes of Graham Bourke and Jack Byrne on the bench, it's very hard to just press the panic button just yet.
Yeah, Tony, any worries that there'll be a bit of fatigue? Because they did have, of course, that title run in that culminated with Charles winning on Friday night and Rovers coming up just that little bit short.
Yeah, maybe that's the reason that there are the changes made. I mean, it was obviously disappointing for them. They, I suppose, kept to their side of the bargain and won the game. That's all they could do. But Shelburne went in and won the league with that late winner up at the Brandywell. So, you know, there have been injuries coming into this as well. We knew, for example, that Danny Mandroy wouldn't be fit, or Sean Hoare or Sean Kavanagh. Changes have been made, and this is the benefit and the beauty, you'd imagine, of having a big squad and an experienced squad. And you still would expect Rovers to do better than they are at the moment, but it's early days in the game. They have the experience, the likes of Pico Lopez on the ball now, Dylan Watts, who has been their player of the year and has been outstanding for them this season, Aaron McInniff back in the team and looking good so far. So they'll just have to keep probing and find a way through this Welsh rear guard.
Yeah, they have so much depth as well, and they've brought in quite a few young players as well throughout the season, Keith.
Yeah, they do. And look, I know I would be one that you look at TNS and you think this is a very, very winnable game for Shamrock Rovers, but you flick through their European results so far, and it took Fiorentina 65 minutes to break them down, only beat them 2-0, and Fiorentina are a very, very decent team. So look, the likes of Graham Bourke, 1 goal and 2 assists already in the European competition. Shamrock Rovers have managed to score 5 goals. 3 of those goals have come directly from Graham Bourke. So as I say, I'm sure Shamrock Rovers will keep the ball, start tiring those legs out of TNS and just see where that can bring them. And as it gets into deeper water, we'll see where Shamrock Rovers are. But you do feel there'll be a reaction from them, whether it's a good reaction or a bad reaction, not being the League of Ireland champions anymore.
Tony, it sounds like something's happening there.
Johnny Kenny
equaliser. Tony?
Yeah, we have an equaliser. Johnny Kenny getting on the score sheet. I wondered had the ball actually crossed the line, hit the post, hit the bar, bounced down, and it has gone in, and Rovers have equalised. So that coming in the 23rd minute of the game. And so just as they were getting a bit worried, a bit concerned, Johnny Kenny has done what he's done all season. He's scoring goals for fun, and he's brought them level here at Tallaght. Shamrock Rovers 1, TNS 1.
Yeah, Keith, he's been a revelation this season, hasn't he? Probably took him a little bit to settle in after coming back from Celtic and such a big club, but God, he's really, this season has taken it all in his stride.
Yeah, he's been brilliant, young Kenny, and his finish here is absolutely superb. As soon as he gets in behind, I think it's Ferrugia has a little flick in behind. It's a brilliant little ball in behind, and once Kenny gets there, it's one touch and fires it off the crossbar right down into the roof of the net and back out. Absolutely clinical. But again, I wax lyrical about Ferrugia. His touch to release Kenny is brilliant, but no more than what Shamrock Rovers deserved. I know it's still early, but they've had the lion's share of the ball. They have looked more dangerous, but the game plan from TNS will not change whatsoever. Let Shamrock Rovers have the ball, and when TNS get it, go straight for the jugular of Shamrock Rovers. So transition's still going to be a big one.
Tony, was it you that said there's no need to panic when you have Johnny Kenny there in your starting 11?
Say again, sorry?
Was it you that said there's no need to panic when you have the likes of Johnny Kenny and you're starting 11?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's proven that all season. It's funny, Stephen Bradley was talking about him at the press conference yesterday because, of course, he's still a Glasgow Celtic player. And because he's had such a good season and because he's got the shop window of Europe now, you'd wonder, is it time for him to move on? But Bradley making the case that he's matured a lot as a person and as a footballer this season. He's scoring different types of goals. He's leading the line. He's running in behind. That was a super finish, as Keith was saying there, with the ball from Ferrugia. And Ferrugia's been given a kind of a free roll this evening. He's popping up, you know, in that sort of pocket of space in front of where the centre forward should be, and delivering a superb through ball like that. But Kenny, you know, he's making those runs and he's finishing is really top notch now. So yeah, what Stephen Bradley was saying was basically, you know, there's no need to rush. He's got a long way to go, a very high ceiling, as he called it, and a long way to go in football, and he can learn a lot more while he remains at Shamrock Rovers, and particularly as he learns the ropes in European competition as well.
Yeah, for sure, that makes sense. Tony, we thought we'd be bringing you a bit of negative Spurs news, but they've actually equalised now against Galatasaray. It's 1-1. You'll be happy to hear.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, Tony, we'll come back to you in just a little while. We're just going to have a chat about last night's Champions League action. And Keith, where else do we start but on Arsenal and the difficulties for them continue? I know you were watching it last night. You are an Arsenal fan, but what's going wrong?
Look, I don't think there's too much wrong. Obviously, we're in a poor vein of form. Not an awful lot of wins. Poor result against Bournemouth, but we were beaten by a really good team last night. I know people, personally, I look at the Odegaard one and I think that really, really hurts us. Some really silly mistakes. And I do think we played well in the game. I don't want to initially go straight too well. We should have had a penalty, and Inter Milan shouldn't have had a penalty. And if the referee does his job properly, then we probably don't lose that game. It's it is harsh. I think we could have done more. We probably should have done more within the game. But Odegaard, not having Odegaard hurts us, you know, not having that little bit of class in the middle of the pitch, that composure to go and pick holes of true people, it really has hurt us. And when you look at the likes of a Manchester City, Liverpool, these squads seem to be able to deal with some of their bigger players being out. But you take Odegaard, you take Rice, you take one or two others out of that Arsenal team, and we do look devoid of any sort of confidence. And look, I like Moreno coming into the team. He seems to have a little bit about him. I think he'll go on to be a very good signing. But you know, last season people were asking me, could Arsenal win the league? And I thought no, because our starting 11 are brilliant, but Saka's going to get injured, Odegaard's going to get injured, there's going to be a Saliba injury, a Gabriel injury, and now, although you know, one or two have got injured, one or two suspensions, we're starting to look like we don't, like, it's very, very hard to ask those starting 11 to go again next season and play the majority of the games. Odegaard has missed probably a month now when we haven't played good football without him. So I just think we're a team that's had a couple of injuries. There's maybe a little bit of bad luck against us. And again, people are trying to get me to buy in. You know, you should be winning the Champions League, you should be winning the Premier League. You have to be realistic. I'm very proud of my team. I think we're doing very well. We're competing, but I'm very, very aware that Manchester City are just a different beast. And although they haven't hit the top stride, they look really good.
What about Edu leaving? Like you mentioned there, okay, Arsenal, they have obviously improved a huge amount. He's getting a lot of credit for what he's brought to the table as the sporting director. But you did say there, they're still lacking a little bit of depth. So is he a bigger loss as people are expecting him to be?
I'm not sure. I don't think you never really know when things off the pitch, you know, in on the business side of football, you're never quite sure, because these teams can get inflated and people can bring other people in. You know, Edu has had a hand in bringing a whole host of people into the building and they've done really, really well. So he's been credited with a lot of that work in the background. And as an Arsenal fan, you sit there and go, brilliant, they're doing their homework. And you just hope that the next people in the door are just as vigilant and do the homework just as well as Edu has done. So I think it's one of them, when he does leave and somebody else comes in, we'll probably realise how good he has actually been at his job. But it's all about who comes in behind him and how well they do the job, and we'll see how good Edu actually was. But look, I don't think those sort of things matter too much. We have a really good, a decent squad. We should be challenging for the title, but in terms of actually going and winning it, I'm not sure that's too realistic.
You're such a pessimist when it comes to Arsenal, all right?
People trying to tell Edu's left now, you aren't going to win the league. I never really thought you were going to win the league. And again, not having a little pop at Manchester United here, but when you look at what's happening at Manchester United, Roman Amorim coming in, and they're just wrestling to get that club going in the right direction, I feel like it was only around the corner that I was there as an Arsenal fan with my club. So although I'm really happy with where we are, I'd love to want more, but you know, it's not so long ago that Arsenal were struggling just to get in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. And it shows as well that teams can turn it around very quickly, and who knows the heights that they're going to hit. And I think when you speak to any Aston Villa fan, if you thought that they would be leading the line in the Champions League and only suffer their first defeat at this stage, and that was against Club Brugge last night, that they would take that as well.
Yeah, look, Aston Villa, I think Unai Emery is going to be on the tongue of every single owner of a Premier League club. When Roman Amorim comes in after about 3 months and he goes to speak to the Manchester United board and he says, I need time, I need to do this, the first name that's going to be thrown back at him, well, Unai Emery managed to do it in this time, and he doesn't have the squad that you have. So he managed to turn it around in about 18 months, just about 2 years, going from relegation fights to Champions League to Europa finals. It's really, really good stuff. So Roman Amorim, I think at United has a really good chance of doing something, but he needs a couple of transfer windows, and given how much United have already spent under Erik ten Hag, I'm not sure how much funds will be made available for him. But it's very, very exciting stuff, really exciting stuff.
What did you think of the bizarre penalty with Tyrone Mings?
I think he's just absolutely switched off. And we do these rondos at the start of every training session. We'll do a rondo and somebody will always kick a ball at you as you're just about to get tackled, and what your reply will normally be is you go and control it with your hand and you play on from there. And I think Tyrone Mings just thought the referee won't give a penalty for this, and he's not under a great deal of pressure. He could easily just go and boot the ball 60 yards and go and deal with it from there. But I think he's thinking it's nil all, we frustrate the crowd, I'll put my hand on this, I'll roll the ball back to Martinez and we'll kill an extra couple of seconds on the clock. But again, as an Arsenal fan, my mind goes back. I'm sure it was Saliba or Gabriel who did it last year, picked up the ball when Arsenal were playing Barcelona, and it went unpunished, and the referee was widely criticised for not giving the penalty. So as soon as you do something like that, pick the ball up in your own box from open play, you're asking for danger. And Tyrone Mings, for as good as a defender as he is, he does have those moments in him, those lapses of concentration where you're just thinking, what are you doing? And a schoolboy error to go and lose a Champions League game like that, concede your first goal in the Champions League game because of that, it's a real sickening feeling. But largely, I'm sure Aston Villa fans are still on top of the world.
Yeah, there's some good games over the last couple of days. Barcelona just seem to be building all the time, albeit they're playing maybe a lower grade opposition with Red Star Belgrade. But still, when you look at the spread of scores over the last few weeks, they just seem to... They're probably just doing it the right way, really, aren't they? Bringing through their own players, building it up, and then throwing in that experience, like having Lewandowski there. He got the two goals last night, but they just... seems to be all going the right way from them.
Yeah, I like Barcelona. Obviously, very, very nice team on the eye to watch. Lewandowski's the one, the goal scorer. Rafinha is the one who will jump in and do things as well. And obviously, they've got such a talented midfield with Pedri as well in there. Frankie de Jong is probably not as classy as Pedri, but will go about, will win the ball back. And Lamine Yamal on the right wing is... What can you say about that kid? He's an absolute superstar already. Brilliant, brilliant player. He's somebody that as soon as Barcelona or Spain are playing, you look to see his name on the sheet, and if his name is there, you're delighted because he gets you on the edge of your seat. And yeah, Red Star Belgrade aren't the best team in the world. They managed to put five past them. Kubarsi as well as a young centre-half I really like, so there's a lot to like about Barcelona. But I still do think they come up against the Manchester City and Inter Milan and Bayern Munich of this world. I think they're just a level below them. I that's not to say they can't go and beat them in one-off games, but I do think on paper there's better teams than Barcelona around right now.
Right now, maybe, but I do think in time they will go back to where they were.
And even now, I don't think they'd fear anybody whatsoever. I'm saying there is better teams around in Europe than them on paper, but I don't think Barcelona would ever feel inferior to anybody given the size of club that they are.
Okay, let's go back to from Barcelona to Tala Stadium. Well, Tony, has the momentum shifted now that Shamrock Rovers have that equaliser?
It's almost a carbon copy of the early stages of the game because Rovers are dominating possession now and they're trying to find a breakthrough. Dara Burns playing as the wing back on the right hand side, and he cuts in on the left foot a lot and he's causing lots of danger. On the other side, Josh Honahan on the left, and he's right footed and that's helping them a lot. And of course McAniff in the middle of the park has been very, very lively. But Farrugia, who was there, who threaded that ball through for the equalising goal for Johnny Kenny, he's been excellent as well. So yeah, it's all Rovers really in terms of possession, but they haven't had another opportunity to get another goal. They had to, as I say, equalise on 24 minutes because the opening goal came to the Welsh champions TNS, and that goal came after just 14 minutes, and that was what we were warned about, really. A breakthrough from a counter-attack from TNS down the left-hand side. The ball came over and Leon Poles pulled off a magnificent save from Declan McMahon. I think it got a touch against a Rovers defender as well. When the ball was recycled, it came back across into the box, and there was Jordan Williams, who initially started the move, who rifled the ball past Poles to give TNS a shock lead. But it's 35 minutes on the clock now, and Rovers still lording possession, looking for another breakthrough. 1-1 it remains.
Thanks so much for that, Tony. We'll be back to you again in a little while. So there's a couple more Nations League games coming up, Keith, for Hamer Hallgrimsson's Ireland team. The big news out of his squad announcement today is that Andy Moran has been elevated to the Ireland senior squad. We have always been looking for that little bit of balance around the middle. Is he the player to bring it?
I'm not sure, Marie. Look, I don't want to sit here and say I don't think Andy Moran's a brilliant footballer. I love watching him play. He's been really good for Stoke, brilliant at Blackburn last season. Of what I've seen him for the 21s, he looks very, very capable player. But I don't think you can... We're the team that has no sort of confidence. You know, it's very, very difficult for us to go and win games. We can be competitive, we can run around, we can make it difficult, but as soon as somebody shows any sort of little twinkling of talent in any league, we seem to think just throw them into our force team and everything will be okay. It's not as easy as that. It really isn't. And you throw Andy Moran in there, I feel like we've been down this route with Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott, Evan Ferguson to a certain degree, Will Smallbone. We've thrown so many people in there thinking they're the ones, they're the link, they'll be the one to make us a nice pretty football team. although having Andy Morton in there is a big, big plus, I don't think he's going to play in these big, big games for us, because if we lose against Finland, then we're in a dead rubber for last place going into the English game over in Wembley. So it's going to be very difficult for us. I'd love to see him get some minutes on the pitch, a little reward from a little pat on the back to say, well done, you've been excellent, there's a little reward, there's a cap for you. But in terms of starting the game and being our mainstay and saying, there's our quarterback, the link, I'm not so sure. But brilliant to have him in, and well deserved from how well he's done with the 21s.
Yeah, for sure. OK, we're going to hear from Hamer Hallgrimsson now. He spoke to Tony O'Donoghue today, and Tony started by asking him how he feels about having Seamus Coleman back in the squad.
Yeah, really. I've kind of not had the privilege to work with him a lot, so he needed to go away in our first game. So looking forward to start working with him again. Yeah, positive, I think, for not only me, the squad as well.
Did you have a chat with him about coming back?
Yeah. I called him. I've been monitoring his coming back from injury, and he's been fit for some time, even though he hasn't played yet, but he's coming.
How much of a concern for you that he hasn't played? Do you think, I mean, he'll be fit enough to start against Finland?
Yeah, he's as fit as he can be and feeling really well. So did some necessary things on his leg, so he feels even better than before. So, no, we're looking forward to start working again.
Shane Duffy coming back, that might be a bit of a surprise to people. What did you see in his form recently that decided you to recall him?
No, he's been playing well for Norwich, seen his matches, gone to Norwich. Yeah, and he brings, of course, experience. Maybe something that we've been missing is duels, winning duels, and he's known for winning his duels. So I think and I hope he brings in both his experience plus some steel in the upcoming games for us, because we need to win more duels than we did in the last camp.
Is that a straight swap for Omobamadele?
Yeah, you can call it that. Omobamadele has been struggling with injury, so he hasn't been able to play much. So it's a good time to see Duffy. We just have so many good central defenders playing day in, day out, so it's difficult to find out who is the best one. But like I've said before, we need to find the stability in our squad and play it. But this is a chance for him to show me and us what he brings.
The fact that you've let Matt Doherty out again will be controversial. He has said since the last squad that he should be in every Ireland squad.
Yeah, this is just the same answer. As I said before, these are the two last camps we have for the World Cup. We know exactly what Matt will bring the squad, what he can deliver to us, but we want to see other options. And for example, now is my first chance to work with Seamus, same position. So no, it's nothing that he did, or you know, we know what he can do and what he brings to the squad, and it's not like we're excluding him.
But same question, I mean, did you have to ring him to tell him again that you were letting him out, and how did he react?
No, I told it last time, both to you, the media, and him, that I wanted to use these two camps to test some players. Nothing has changed since then.
Robbie Brady and Chidozie Ogbene, they've shown in the recent past how important they've been to Ireland. How big a blow is it for you to lose both of those?
Yeah, of course, all coaches would like to have the best players. That's in an ideal world, in a perfect world, but it's never like this, so It's not something that we should be thinking a lot about. They're not with us, and we shouldn't be talking much about the players that we cannot use and cannot help us. We should focus on the players that are with us. But especially for me, Robbie has been probably the most consistent player since I came in. But now Callum O'Dowda is fit and playing really well. He's had man of the match performances, so I'm looking forward to see him. So it's always like this. When something closes, something else opens, and hopefully it's positive for us.
Tom Cannon and Andy Moran come in. Moran in particular has the potential in midfield to offer something that we haven't had recently.
Yeah, both have been playing well for Stoke. Young players, exciting players. And Andy, we were thinking about bringing him in earlier, but we didn't want to spoil four of the under-21s. They had big chance of going into finals. So, but now is a good chance to see him and see him in the squad, how he meshes to the others. And just looking forward to seeing them both. They bring something different, like you said, to the squad. And And yeah, it's we're learning, we're improving, hopefully, and they can give something that we didn't have before.
You beat Finland in Helsinki. You'll want to do the same in Dublin. What's the target for these two matches?
I think it's healthy just to focus on the Finland game first. That will be a decisive game where we'll end up in this group. And yeah, I think we want to go for a win at home against Finland, knowing that we can play well against them from the first game. And then the England game, we'll take that when it comes.
Well, very best of luck to you and both of them.
Thank you.
Couple of big games really, Keith, isn't it, when you think about the pressure that he's going to come under pretty quickly if he doesn't beat Finland anyway.
Yeah, look, again, I don't think we're all looking forward to the English game, but I don't think anybody's expecting us to go and beat the English over in Wembley. We can give a good account of ourselves, but the Finnish game is the one where we're thinking, let's get ourselves off the bottom of the table, let's not be flirting with that whatsoever. But the Finnish game for me, when we got the 3 points against the Finnish, it was a really difficult game, and without the likes of Ogbeni, Brady, Smallbone, it is a worry for me. When you look at our midfield, you know, the likes of Malumbi, Cullen, Jason Knight, it's all very, very familiar, and you're thinking, again, where does the half turn? And again, I know I'm saying I don't
Andy
want
Andy Ward
I just don't want to scar the young man. I don't want to throw him in there and him think, you know, have 10-15 minutes of it and think, you know what, I'm not quite ready for this, because you can scar boys. I've gone in, played games, and I thought, I'm not quite ready for this, and it can set you back. Who's the English midfield? I think there's a fella called Jude Bellingham that's not quite bad. Declan Rice, that's actually not too bad themselves. And they can throw Foden and Palmer as well in there. So they have all sorts of talent, that English midfield. The Finnish midfield won't be too bad either. There's a Glenn Kamara that people will know, playing his football in France and played a lot of football for Rangers as well. You've got Ant-Man, who's a real superhero up front. Not sure you didn't get that reference now. Ant-Man, superhero. And obviously Timo Pukki has some decent movement as well up front, so Finland aren't a bad team, although I do expect us to go out there and try and impose ourselves onto the Finnish. Finland can be able to hurt us as well. They're a decent transition team when they win it.
You're loving the word transition. There's been another goal at Tallaght Stadium.
Yeah, really good goal. This time it was Ferrugia and Bournes on the wing. Ferrugia does really well, keeps the ball, sucks two of the TNS players to him, gives the ball to Bournes, and he floats a lovely ball to the back stick, and Dylan Watts comes flying in and just bundles the ball over the back of it, over the line. If he doesn't put it in, Josh Honahan is just behind him as well. So a whole host of Rovers players queuing up to put the ball in the back of the net, and they really have wrestled this this game towards them now.
Yeah, so 43 minutes gone, and it is Shamrock Rovers 2, TNS 1, and very much Shamrock Rovers on top at the moment. Manchester United playing Pauk tonight. It is another game for Ruud van Nistelrooy to prove himself as manager before Amaroun comes in a couple of days. When is he coming in? Is it
Monday?
Right, yeah, so very quickly.
Yeah, so he has tonight, and then he'll have, I think, United play Leicester on Sunday, so that'll be his last game. And look, I'll give United every chance. I get that Pauk are not a bad team, they'll keep the ball, but Manchester United, for me, the Chelsea game, they were so poor, so lifeless. And I look at that Chelsea team and you think, on paper, that's a decent result for Manchester United, because Chelsea have so much talent. But Chelsea were really undercooked, didn't really come to the party. Cole Palmer wasn't really great, although, you know, when Martinez flies out with his stud showing that height and makes contact with the knee, for me, it should have been a red. And you look at things like that, there was no need for Martinez to make that challenge. And you're thinking, I can't find any confidence in this Manchester United team whatsoever. But Dejan Lovren will be playing centre-half for Pauk tonight, 35-year-old Dejan Lovren. So you'd imagine you would fancy Rasmus Højlund up against him in the physical battle. If they leave any sort of space in behind, they'll be able to get in behind with the pace. So I fancy United, but it's not going to be easy. And if they make the basic mistakes that they usually make, if they turn up with the work rate that they usually turn up with, they can get turned over. But you would assume that Ruud will crack the whip and for his last two games make sure that the lads are chomping at the bit.
Yeah, and of course they know that Amaroun will be watching them as well. So
yeah, I'm sure he should be. You would imagine he'll be at the crowd tonight. And I think it's a bigger game for Manchester United than you would think on paper, because at home against FC20, they weren't able to get the win. They drew that game. Porto 3-3 drew that game away from home. And then Fenerbahce over in Turkey is not a bad result. It's a difficult place to go. But you've Pauk, then you've got Bodo Glimt and Victoria Plzeň, which is Czech Republic away, which is the tough place to go. So 3 points on the board would just ease, you know, it'd give United that little bit of wiggle room going into the last couple of games, which is what you always want.
France, and all the squads have been named today, but France have left Kylian Mbappe out of their squad, so he's playing for Real Madrid now, obviously, and not playing too well. Well, the whole team aren't playing too well. There seems to be something going on there, but it's a strange one, really, that he's not playing for France. And Didier Deschamps has refused to say whether his captain is injured, but now he's been absent for 4 games.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is, you know, him getting a slap on the wrist, or this is Deschamps maybe just trying to take him out of the limelight and saying, you know what, look, you've had a bit of a tough start to your life at Real Madrid. I'll just take you out, go and get your feet up for a while, go and sit on a beach in Dubai and forget about it, and we'll come back next month and we'll see how we are. Or is it, you know what, you've been really poor and you're getting a slap on the wrist? But I'm not too sure. You would imagine that with Kylian Mbappe's ego and stature within the French team, and with Griezmann just retiring as well, that Deschamps might want to keep a couple of people on side. So I imagine he's just trying to take him out of the limelight, give him a little bit of a rest. There could be an underlying injury that we don't know about, and maybe the international managers thought, you know what, I'll do the right thing and I'll give you a little bit of a break. But he's obviously one of the best forwards in the world, and if he's fit and available, the French would absolutely love to have him. So I'd imagine there's something in the background that we're not quite privy to just yet.
Yeah, well, Deschamps has said that it was a one-off decision and that the player wanted to come and join the team, so I'd say there's a bit more to it. But the Real Madrid lost to AC Milan and have just been going through a really tricky time, and you mentioned Bellingham earlier, and when you look at the squad they have, it's nearly an embarrassment of riches. Like, you expect them to perform all the time. Is it a case that other teams just raise their game when they're playing them, or what is it?
Yeah, I think everybody raises their game. You know, when you talk about Manchester United, you raise your game. Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, there's so many big European heavyweights that, you know, the so-called normal teams will raise their game for it, and that will always happen against Real Madrid. But Real Madrid under Carlo Ancelotti, they seem to be able to just soak up, you know, so much punishment, and in around the 70th minute, it doesn't matter if they're 1-0 down, 2-0 down, they go and get the ball to Mbappe and Vinicius Junior, the whore teams, and they go and win it in the last 20 minutes, which is probably not what people want to see. They'd like to see a little bit more domination, a little bit more possession based. But I love watching Real Madrid, because it doesn't seem like Carlo Ancelotti gets too down and dirty with the tactics. It's like, lads, look, I'll put you into a defensive shape, I'll get you into some sort of shape, but when you get the ball, go and win it for me. That's why you're all here. He's a good footballer, and every attacking player loves that. Maybe Mbappe is struggling a little bit with the lack of structure going forward. I'm not too sure, but you would imagine when we get to January, Manchester City, Real Madrid, this is when the big European heavyweights kick into gear. So I think they're a million miles away
at the moment, are they?
Yeah.
But like Ancelotti, as you said there, he doesn't get too bogged down by tactics, is probably a good way to put it. But is he struggling a bit because he has the likes of Mbappe and Bellingham, and he doesn't seem to be able, they seem a bit imbalanced since Mbappe came? I mean, it's a great problem to have, like, but still.
Yeah, well, look at what you need in modern football is pace on the wings, and Real Madrid have bags and bags of pace on the wing. But do Vinicius Junior and Mbappe want to suffer for that 60 minutes before they decide to start to really throw the dice? And look, when you've got them two players in your team, you should be able to go and win the majority. When you talk about Bellingham as well, and some of the other players that Real Madrid have within their squad, they're a really, really good team. They're already off the pace in La Liga, so look, I expect them to be there or thereabouts when it comes to the Champions League final. I think they'll easily get through to the next stage, given that I think it's the top 24, 26 as it go through. So, look, they'll definitely get through to the next phase, and it's all about the draw after that. But mark my words, semi-finals, final, Real Madrid will be there or thereabouts, aren't they always?
So don't worry about them. Let's go back to Tony O'Donoghue in Talis Stadium. Half time, Tony, and things have turned around again for Shamrock Rovers.
Time to just take a breath, really, because we've had an excellent first 45 minutes and 2 minutes added by the fourth official. So, breathless sort of game, I have to say. And TNS took the lead against the run of play after 14 minutes. It was a swift counter-attack from the left, met by Declan McManus. Not Elvis Costello. The ball ricocheted off a Rovers defender, and Leon Poles pulled off a terrific save in the Rovers goal. The ball eventually going out for a throw on the right for the Welsh champions. And when the ball was recycled and came back into the Rovers box, Jordan Williams, who started that counter, he was unmarked in the box and rifled past Poles for the opening goal. But then Rovers replied on 24 minutes. Neil Ferrugia has been terrific tonight in that sort of free role in the space between the midfielders and Johnny Kenny up front, and he's really can go where he wants tonight, and he shows how valuable a player he is. He threaded a great ball through to Johnny Kenny, and Johnny Kenny has been in magnificent form this season. He struck a shot that, it was a fierce drive really, that went in off the bar, bounced on the line, and that was no more than Rovers deserved. And then the Hoops took the lead on 38 minutes. Dara Burns is playing on the right hand side as a wing back. He's playing very far forward. He's cutting in and using his left foot from the right. He's also linking up with Ferrugia. That's what they did, deep in enemy territory. Ferrugia got the ball back to Burns. He floated one to the back post, and there was Dylan Watts flying in to score again. He's now scored that sensational equaliser against Applewell, which has set up Rovers for this campaign, really. He's Rovers Player of the Year. Johnny Kenny is Rovers Young Player of the Year. So fitting, perhaps, that the two of those should be on the score sheet so far. And yeah, no more than Rovers deserve. They've owned possession, but TNS have shown and proven, Stephen Bradley was right to say, they're very, very quick on the counter and dangerous. It took a long time for Fiorentina to break them down. It was over an hour, and they did beat Astana 2-0. So by a long shot, this game isn't over by any means yet, but time for us to draw a breath here and wait and see if Shamrock Rovers will perhaps use some of their substitutes in the second half. Maybe we will see Graham Burke get some game time. He was so important, of course, in the win against Larne. Or Gary O'Neill, who's usually, for my money, the first name on Stephen Bradley's team sheet when he's fit. He's on the bench tonight as well. And so too is Jack Byrne. So Jack Byrne's involvement has often been later in games, after an hour or thereabouts. So we'll have to see if we'll see any of those sprung from the bench tonight. But so far, in an exciting game, an entertaining game, with 6,000 fans here at Tallaght Stadium, despite all the traffic. At halftime, it's Rovers 2, TNS 1.
Thanks, Tony. Before I let you go, would you like a Tottenham Hotspur update?
I was just on Radio 1 with John Kenny, and he told me it's 3-1.
It is 3-1 still, halftime there. Thanks, Tony. We'll chat to you in a little while. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. Bernard Jackman is standing by to look ahead to that Ireland-New Zealand match tomorrow.
Game on 2FM.
Well, tomorrow sees Ireland host the All Blacks in the Aviva Stadium under lights. It's a huge game for both teams. Lots of interest in it, lots of eyeballs on it, and lots of excitement too. So says Caelan Doris, the Ireland captain. He spoke to Michael Corcoran today.
Yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than this. Friday night, full house in the Aviva against New Zealand. So there's massive excitement within the group. We've had a good 10 days preparation so far, a week in Portugal. With some warm weather, warm and wet weather training over there, but got through quite a bit, and the lads are massively looking forward to tomorrow.
How important is that camp, for want of a better phrase, the fact you spend all that time together within your own bubble, basically just concentrating on yourselves?
Yeah, it's great because it allows you to get over everything, get all the detail, have the conversations you need to have, and then when you're off, you're off, and you can enjoy each other's company, have a few dinners out, and properly grow the relationships to another level within the squad.
You're in a situation where you haven't played a game collectively since the trip to South Africa. New Zealand have played two matches already. Does that give them a slight edge, or how do you try and contract that?
Yeah, you can look at it both ways. Obviously, you could argue they'll be more cohesive and have more game minutes together, but they're towards the end of their season as well, so there might be a bit of a freshness advantage on our side. But I think either way, you're playing on your strengths and trying to get a performance as best as possible.
When you look at the last number of years, Ireland have done really well against New Zealand, but taking the big umbrella kind of helicopter view of the whole lot, over the years, wins against New Zealand are something that needs to be celebrated when they do happen.
Absolutely, yeah. Like you say, over the last 5-6+ years, there's been a few more wins going our way. If you look back before that, it was a very rare thing. So I think the belief is there. Now that it has been done, that it can be done again, but you still have to respect them massively and know what a threat they are and can be.
Physically, I would imagine it's going to be an absolutely immense game.
Yeah, big time. I think in these top level tests, the physicality always goes up another level. And yeah, it's been no different in our battles against these guys over the last number of years. So we're going to have to be both mentally and physically primed for a proper battle.
Just from your own point of view, how do you differentiate or how distinguish between Caelan the player and Caelan the captain? I mean, or how do you try and knit the two together, if you understand?
Yeah, I think the advice has been prepare like I would normally. Don't forego my own preparation for the sake of the team. But obviously you also have the added responsibilities and have to look a little bit broader, but nailing my own stuff and getting my own performance right is number one.
You've had to walk in through the tunnel to come back in here to do all this media stuff. Have you thought at all about what it'll be like to stand in that tunnel tomorrow night, flashing lights everywhere, 50,000 people waiting for an epic encounter?
Yeah, massive excitement for it. Going back to 2021, one of my favourite games I've played here in the Aviva against New Zealand, and there's a massive excitement for tomorrow night.
That was Caelan Doris speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on. I'm delighted to say that Bernard Jackman joins us now on the line. Bernard, there is a lot of excitement, a lot of expectation. Are we going to get the thriller that we are hoping we will?
No, you would think so. I mean, both teams are packed to it. Players with great attacking prowess, lots of flair. Both teams like to play. They have different styles, to be fair, and styles makes fights, and I think it'll be fascinating to see how that unfolds. Will New Zealand use the same defensive strategy which they used in that World Cup quarterfinal, which did frustrate Ireland, and it was very unusual. Everybody now is talking about line speed and defence, and they actually went the complete opposite of that. They didn't really get off the line at all. They just stayed connected, stayed together, let Ireland play out their moves and plays in front of them, and Ireland found it very hard to break them down. So that'll be pretty fresh in their memories. It worked for them, so they may do that again. It's very much different than what normally these players face at provincial level or are faced against the Springboks, for example, in the summer. So that's going to be an interesting side to us. And then just the whole, I suppose, bad blood or animosity amongst both squads, it's there. Both coaches will say it's not, but it is there, mm-hmm. because of what happened in New Zealand on tour, because of the quarter final. And look, the reality is, New Zealand took away dreams from a lot of Irish players. 4 years of hard work, some will never get the chance again. And while beating them tomorrow night won't make up for that, it's the only thing this team can do, and it's kind of like what they did after the World Cup bow out. The only thing they could really do was go and win the Six Nations, and they did that. And hopefully we get a really positive performance from Ireland. Obviously the injury to Tadhg Furlong is a bit of a blow, but Finney Beelam has been in Irish squads 4 times they've beaten New Zealand, so he's very experienced. He's 33 years of age. He's done a good job when he started or came on, but I would worry about our depth at prop. I mean, if that happened to Andrew Porter early, it's a big ask for Keane Healy to go 70 minutes against an All Blacks side who have used their bench very well, who have 4 very good scrummagers. And Tom O'Toole, while he's a very good player in the loose, isn't proven as an international tight head yet against a team like this. So that's a worry for Ireland. And look, he's played Andrew Porter 70 minutes, 75 minutes, even 80 minutes on occasions, and he may have to do that again tomorrow. And then I suppose the other concern is the lack of game time for our hookers. But thankfully, Ronan Keller and Rob Herring have proved that they're fit to play, and it's a lot better than it looked 3 or 4 weeks ago with both of them being doubtful.
So what you're saying is that although everyone that is associated with this Ireland camp, players, coaching staff, who are saying it's not a revenge mission, it is very much a revenge mission. And when you look at the squad that Andy Farrell has picked, is it just a squad that's there to go out and win this test?
Yeah, look, I think Andy's been really open and clear, and it's been transparent in terms of, you look at the teams he's picked and the squads he's picked. He's very much living in the now. The other countries post-World Cup, some of them had different head coaches, so that's always going to lead to more change. Other countries like New Zealand had a couple of retirements or players going to Japan. Richie Mwanga may come back for the next World Cup, but at the moment he's on a sabbatical. We had Johnny Sexton retire, but apart from that, it's pretty much the same players, and that's going to be really interesting. And first of all, he's been able to bring some of those older players into camp with little game time, and they've always performed, but there'll be a day when they don't, and then he'll make that call. So yeah, you would imagine if we lose tomorrow night, it's probably an opportunity lost. And look, England lost last weekend, probably down to bringing on a young nine, Randall, but at least he has the experience of it, and potentially the next time he plays New Zealand will be a better player for it. So it's a fine line. Farrell has been excellent at managing that, and to win tomorrow night, I think we'll give enough self-belief and confidence in the system and the team that it's worth it. But if you're to lose tomorrow night, you definitely be wondering, should we maybe be a little bit more ambitious in terms of maybe change things up? But in fairness to him, he said, I can't make players out of nowhere. I mean, probably when you look at the provinces, there hasn't been as many players as we would have liked putting their hand up to be genuine contenders for a test match tomorrow night.
When I was introducing this item at the top of the show, I'm sure you're tuning in, Bernard, I said that you're going to tell us where this game is going to be won and lost. So where will it be won and lost?
The kicking game. And a lot of people don't like the kicking game, but there's a new trial law which means that you can't block the kick chaser like you have been for the last 4 or 5 years. And it was evident last weekend that it created a lot more chaos, a lot more balls won back in the air. And this is something that the back three players, the people who are in the backfield for Ireland, haven't really had to do a lot of, because they've been so well protected by players coming back and shepherding. That now is being trialled, and it's outlawed, and you're getting way more contests in the air. And I think that's the key. The team who dominate that battle will have a great chance of winning the game. Plus, the set piece scrum is absolutely massive. And at the moment, you know, I think Irish fans will be crossing their fingers a little bit that our starting props can go 70, 75 minutes.
So who's going to win? Give me a score prediction.
Ireland by two.
Okay, Bernard Jackman, as always, thank you so much for all of that. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We'll be going stateside to Jeff Shepherd after these.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. The second half is underway in Tallaght Stadium. Shamrock Rovers still leading TNS by 2-1. Manchester United against Pauk will get underway at 8 o'clock. Keith, you have some team news?
Yeah, the Manchester United team news is in against Pauk. So we have Andre Onana in goal, Mazraoui as the right back or left back, never quite sure. Lindelof and Johnny Evans as the two centre halves. I have Dalot in as the left back. Casemiro and Ugarte as the two holding midfielders. Amad Diallo starts on the right. Bruno Fernandes just in behind him. Alejandro Garnacho on the left, and Rasmus Højlund as the point up front. So a 4-2-3-1 it looks like for Manchester United tonight.
Okay, very good. We are going to go back to Tallaght Stadium now for an update from Tony O'Donoghue. Tony, how have Shamrock Rovers started this second half?
Yeah, it's almost a carbon copy of the first in many respects. We're in the 51st minute and Rovers began very strongly. Josh Honahan had a shot from distance that whizzed past the post and past the TNS goalkeeper, Conor Roberts. Showing an intent from Rovers once again. We did see at halftime Aaron Green doing quite a spirited warm-up along with Graham Burke, thinking that maybe they might be being considered to come on, but maybe that'll be a bit later on in the game. But then TNS once again showed how dangerous they can be. On 48 minutes, a counter-attack from them, and Jordan Williams, who got their opening goal, the opening goal of the game, was floated in on the blind side really and had an opportunity. So that's something that Rovers have to be careful of. TNS on the move again, just outside the Rovers penalty area, and the ball is just about being cleared away through Dara Burns. And then Marcus Poom has been very effective anchoring the Rovers midfield tonight. Well, he tried a shot from distance as well, so it's very entertaining. There's plenty of action up and down the field. Johnny Kenny on the ball now and trying to force his way through the centre of the TNS defence, but they've won the ball back, and again they're breaking down their right hand side. Now they are dangerous on the counter, that's for sure. So we may not see the end of the goals in this game so far. It's 52 minutes in now. Rovers 2, TNS 1.
Great stuff. Thanks for that. Tony, it's time now to go stateside to Jeff Shepherd, who always has his eye on all things American sports. Although, Shep, I'm going to start with something a little bit different. Is it fair to say that only Pope Francis can save the New Orleans Saints now?
Well, yes. I mean, I know we don't always do religion in sports, but yes, in this instance, it might be up to the pontiff to say this. you know, the Saints fired their head coach, Dennis Allen, right around the same time that the Pope sent out a tweet about, you know, All Saints Day and Saints. And he happened to use the Fleur de Lis, which is, you know, the symbol of the city of New Orleans and the symbol on the Saints helmets. And just the timing of it was a little too perfect. And so now we're hoping for some divine intervention to see if they can get things turned around, because they're playing their hated rivals, the Atlanta Falcons, this weekend. So, I mean, if at any time, holy water or something, you know, do we need to do some more, get some, you know, some penance? I mean, I don't know if we have confession for the whole city, whatever it is that we need to do.
You need to
maybe
restore
this will
the
be the
faith.
Weekend. We need to. We absolutely.
And I'd imagine as Saints fans, you're going to be going to that game.
Yes, all of Team Shep will be loading up and heading over to the game, because I don't learn lessons, Marie. So that's really what it boils down to, right?
Yeah, well, don't give up anyway, Shep. That's for sure.
No,
Jude McTanamy has been getting unbelievable notice because of what he'd done at the weekend with his NFL debut for the New York Giants. And we love seeing an Irish guy in the NFL, but he did well, Shep, didn't he?
No, he did. He kicked a couple of field goals last week, and you're going to have an opportunity to watch him a little bit closer to home potentially this week. Now, look, it's not going to be the greatest game. It's the Panthers and the Giants. So, once again, America not exporting its greatest. But they're playing in Munich, Germany this weekend. And look, you know, the Giants kicker may be back, but if not, you know, he'll be on the roster. He'll be on the sidelines. And look, we've talked about this before, Marie. This is that program that allows, you know, teams to keep international players. And look, it's benefited the Giants. It's benefited a lot of these players. And so this is just awesome to see, you know, this kind of come to fruition.
Great stuff, Shep. Thank you for all of that. We'll be talking to you again next week. That is all we have time for this evening. Keith Tracy, thank you so much for coming in while our Shamrock Rovers going to win this game.
Yeah, it looks like you seem fairly comfortable keeping the ball. It's just, as Tony has alluded to, TNS do have a little bit breaking forward on the counter. So as long as they keep that under wraps, they should be okay.
Great stuff. Well, do tune in tomorrow. We'll be looking ahead to the big FAI Cup final between Derry and Drogheda. And also, of course, that huge game for Ireland and New Zealand.